Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum, Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest is a comedian, an author and presenter. He won the first series of Taskmaster, which is my favourite thing to watch on TV ever. he's part of Channel 4's The Last Leg, co-host of the Parenting Hell podcast alongside Rob Beckett, married to Rose, dad to two children, four-year-old Pearl and nine-month-old Cassius. It is Josh Whittaker.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, thanks. Very good. Pleased to be here.
Are you?
Yeah, I am. This is my main break is podcasts now.
Really?
That's my relaxing and my social life.
What was your childhood like? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Devon in the middle of nowhere on Dartmoor. I don't know if you've been to Devon.
I have heard of Dartmoor. Dartmoor's pretty. It's a place that people know.
Yeah, it's pretty remote. So I kind of grew up, my parents moved down there when I was 3.5. Well, we all moved down there when I was 3.5.
They took you with them.
yeah, I thought, I'll go along. I stayed in London for another couple of years now. And
when you say remote, how remote?
There was 4 kids in my year at primary school. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Really remote. Like, yeah. I lived in a village and it had a post office and a pub. And That was it. That kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Pretty Postman Pat, do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
that
kind of.
But without the helicopter that he's now got, which I'm not sure I mean,
he has just gone on to another level now.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd stand by that as an idea.
So was it just you? Or did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I've got half brothers and half sisters, but they were from my dad's first marriage, so they didn't live with us.
Yeah.
But they lived in Cornwall.
Okay.
So it was me and my parents, and my gran lived in the other side of the house.
Oh, wow. So quite a quiet childhood.
Yeah, very quiet childhood, yeah. I think, yeah, definitely. You don't realise it at the time, do you? Because everything just feels normal at the time. But yeah, very sedate.
Yeah. And then was there a point when you got to secondary school or anything where your sort of the circle of people around you got bigger? Or was that all in the same
village? Yeah,
well,
there was 1,000 kids at the secondary school.
Wow, that must have blew your mind.
Yeah, so I just kind of disappeared a bit really there. Yeah. Understandably, I think, like... I don't remember that as being, I've got none of that kind of feeling of like, oh God, that was tough or that was difficult or any of that. But I just, you're a big deal at primary school and then you're suddenly not at secondary school.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite weird, but it was quite exciting, obviously. Because you'd like, I think by the end of primary school, you realise there's probably more to life than four people in your year. Do you know what I mean? And so it was really nice to go to a big school like that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, being with four people, it's like family. That you've got no choice there. Those four people are your mates. Whereas when you go to secondary school and there's so many, you can actually pick and choose who you hang out with.
Yeah. But it's interesting because, like, my daughter's going to school next year and kind of we've been to see two schools and one of them's got, like, small classes, and which is great because you to me, that feels really normal.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not four, but it's like 15 or 16 or whatever.
Yeah.
But my wife can't quite... It took her a while to kind of normalise that because she's so used to her school, which was 30 kids in a class.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And but I think if you've got a smaller class, in a way, it makes you be friends with people that aren't exactly like you,
mm-hmm.
which is quite a kind of advantage in a way because you're friends with everyone and it makes you kind of realise that you're not just friends with the other people that like Frozen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like you can, you have to kind of make these relationships and that's obviously much more like maybe adult life as well.
Yeah. Is it strange thinking that Pearl's going to go to school?
Yes.
Like, that's a whole new chapter.
Yeah, it's really weird. Well, she's been at nursery.
Yeah. But this is different. I kind of feel like with nursery, if something's going on, you kind of be like, oh, we won't take you in today because actually we're going to go do this. You know, we've got a day off, let's all do something together. Whereas school, they have a definite place that they have to be.
Yeah.
The rules change.
Yeah, and you can't... I'm kind of dreading the mornings because now, if she's late, she's late. No one gives a shit. Do you know what I mean? It's like, fine, she just misses breakfast. They don't care.
Yeah.
It's probably easier for them. Yeah. But like now, we're doing all this morning stuff with a deadline, which I know everyone else does that, but I don't understand how. Like, I'm acting like I'm the first person that's ever had to do that.
Oh,
with a child,
we've had it this week.
I can't quite believe it's possible.
We've had it this week where, so we live 20 minutes away from the school. We've had it where Tom's had to come back one day because he forgot their blazers. So one of them was upset because he forgot the blazers.
Yeah.
And then another day he forgot the show and tell for the 3-year-old who's at the nursery of the school. So he had to come back again to get that. So I like to think that we're organised, but we're forever, you know, dropping the, you know, we're always getting it wrong.
It's weird, isn't it? It's because also there's a that one we're looking at is about 20 minutes away, and you're like, I my school was 3 miles away or whatever because it was in the countryside, and so it's probably 20 minutes away.
Yeah,
but you didn't think anything of it. Whereas now I'm like, oh my god, the commute for the next 6 years is going to be like nightmarishly long,
and that just becomes a part of your life for the next, you know, however many years.
Totally. And it's weird, isn't it? Because you suddenly go, like, the nursery's quite a way away, like, similar distance maybe, but it's not every day. It's not. And so you just go, oh, wow, this is what I'm going to be kind of chained to for the next 6 years.
Yeah. Well, when we first found the school that the kids go to, we lived about, well, on a good day, it was 25 minutes away. But then when you factor in school traffic, it ended up being 50 minutes away. So it would be like, well, because going home would always be a bit quicker, but it would be like an hour and a half round journey every day.
Whoa.
Yeah. So we ended up moving anyway. A big part of that was the school and getting closer because you do just realise how much of your day that's eating into.
Yeah, totally. And I kind of think like what I've got addicted to is putting the school into Google Maps.
Yeah.
At different times of the day to just see how long the journey would be if I had to do it now.
Always
and I'm like,
on Waze.
Oh, it's actually quite clear now. Yeah, I can just check that.
I was definitely doing that when I was really trying to get Tom to agree to buying this house. Because I was being like, look, right now, 16 minutes. 16.
But, you know, that is one thing about school is you go, God, there is going to be this point because... My son's going to go to the nursery near, I think, and stuff, where, like, neither of them are going to be in the house. And that's going to be so weird.
It's such a game changer. So all of our three are out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday between 8 and 4. And it is just so different. It's that guilt-free work time. Yeah. The silence. Yeah. I can remember the first time it happened, coming home and hearing the fridge hum. And just be like, what a beautiful sound. It's totally different.
I can't quite believe it'll happen, but it will. It, you know, I think, so my son's, what, 9 months now? You said that, and I thought,
do you agree with that? Is that a good
statement? Yeah, I've been saying 8 months, but you're right, and I'm wrong about my own son. But yeah, we haven't really had any moment. He hasn't gone to nursery yet or anything. Yeah. So we haven't got to that. You forget what it's like. For 2 years, when my daughter would go to nursery for 3 days a week, you'd have that time when you were just in the house, but it's, you suddenly lose it. And then of course you'll get to the age where you miss it because you go, because you don't ever get to see your children because they're in the bedroom.
And you're telling everyone you meet. That. And you tell everyone you meet, make the most of it. It goes so fast. Is your daughter hanging out in her bedroom? Is that what she's doing?
Yeah, she started doing that in the last 2 months. Maybe even in the last month. So she started going up to her bedroom, not wanting you to go in, that kind of thing. She's doing something. You feel guilty. You feel like, am I, is this bad parenting here? I don't understand. Like, but that's what she wants. Like, should I be?
Well, I think that was the hardest part of the whole of lockdown, though, is that the kids didn't get the independence that they would have done had they been going to school and nursery. They were with you so much that actually I think they do need that little bit of time to just step away.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But you do feel like, God, should I be putting on a treasure hunt or something? Not that I've ever done that in my life.
So did you always know that you wanted to be a dad?
No, not at all. I don't think so at all. Definitely not in my 20s, I wouldn't have thought. I wasn't like, I don't want to be a dad.
Yeah.
It just didn't really figure in my mind as a thing I want, as a thing. It felt removed from my existence in my 20s.
Right.
I think a lot of people that get into comedy, stand-up comedy, you know, you live this kind of, I think I loved being a student and the freedom of being a student and that kind of, and I think doing stand-up was in a way as close as you can get to that. Like, you're your own boss, you're working when you want, you know, you're going to a cafe and writing in the day or whatever, and then you're working in the evening or whatever. That was my life throughout my 20s. That work came first, and social life was related to work. And I think what I do as a job is one of those jobs which is incredible in your 20s, but everything that makes it great in your 20s makes it bad in your 30s when you've got kids.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I don't really drink now that much, but the fact that, you know, your job is really, you can do it with alcohol around. It's like working 10 Downing Street. You can do it with like, you can, the fact, the social and the job, the fact you're working nights, all these things that felt really exciting and freeing in your 20s feel really annoying when you've got children, because I got back last night at 1 a.m. from King's Lynn, where I was doing a tour show, and then you're up at 6, and that wouldn't be a problem if you didn't have kids, but suddenly the job counteracts with the kids.
Well, and you can't, it's one of those things, if you've missed the bedtime, so I'm doing a show at the moment, and I always feel like if I've missed the bedtime, I can't then stay in bed the next morning. I probably should catch up on my sleep, but you can't because you know that the other parent's done that bit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I just think otherwise you're like, your life is, you're the one who's sleeping. Well, we've kind of got a system where I'll get up for a bit, for like an hour or so with our son to give my wife a lie until about 7:30.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back to bed for an hour and a half maybe. And it's like, you're like, this isn't really a long-term solution that we that we never see each other till 9 a.m. because one of us is asleep in different shifts.
But then seeing each other at 9 a.m. that's still a decent time. It's if it's carrying on throughout the whole day that you're doing shifts like that.
Yeah, I don't think the job suits being a parent. So to go back, at that point, I didn't in any way think about being a dad.
Yeah.
And then we kind of, I think like a lot of people, you just go, oh, maybe that's the next thing. Or maybe kind of, we weren't trying for a baby, but we weren't not, if you know what I mean, that kind of thing. I think a lot of people, or maybe you're slightly kidding yourself. You're going, well, what'll be will be, because you don't want to kind of tempt fate or anything.
Mm.
But so that was how it happened. You kind of drifted into it in a weird way, if that makes sense.
Can you remember how you felt when you first found out that Rose was pregnant?
It was the morning after her last leg. So I woke up late because I'd been at the BBC till 2 a.m. or something. And then the main memory I've got is not so much when she told me. I remember we went for breakfast after I knew. And suddenly you're watching other parents of young children. Right. And you're going, suddenly those people that disappeared into the nothingness of, you know, life when you were looking around a cafe are now the people you're watching going, what's that like then? That's going to be me. Oh, look, he's struggling to get his pram through the door. Oh, God, that's going to be... And that's my main memory is suddenly that kind of switch of being in Marito on Hackney Road having breakfast and suddenly you're watching the other parents going, okay, this is my life now.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how all of a sudden everything's almost new in that way? You know, that switch, that shift of focus becomes, it happens so quickly and instantly.
Yeah, totally. And then you kind of, try and prepare and all that kind of...
Were you a good preparer? What did you do to prepare?
I don't think you can prepare. Yeah. I tried to be a good preparer, but you realise that you can't, you know. We bought all the stuff. I was quite good at that. Made a spreadsheet of all the stuff we needed to buy.
Did you?
Because I am a preparer. I like everything I like to do methodically and well. Do you know what I mean?
Did you read lots of books about pregnancy?
I read one book.
Okay.
Not about pregnancy, about having a child.
Okay.
Which I now look back on, I won't say what it was, as a little too prescriptive.
Right.
And a little too, if you do this, then your baby will do this, like it's a supercomputer rather than a human being.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I've found... It's very easy to read that chapter in the book before you have a baby and go, oh, great, well, they're going to be sleeping 12 hours after 3 months. If I just do this.
Yeah.
And then reality hits. But it was probably the first thing I've ever done where you can't prepare in the way that where you're just thrown into. But I think that's quite freeing. And I think that's really good.
It didn't worry you. It was, you were okay with it.
No, I wasn't initially. But I think looking back now, I think there's a really good lesson for people who are like me, who are quite kind of do the research, you know, at school, right? You know, I'd read all the things, write the essay, da, 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 you know, that actually it's quite freeing to be thrown into something where you don't have that much control and where you have to react rather than there's not much you can do because suddenly your child has hand, foot, and mouth and that's it. That's the next 3 days of your life.
Yeah.
And you've just got to surrender to it. And I think that's a really good kind of life lesson about you can't control everything.
Yeah, yeah. Did you do any antenatal classes or hypnobirthing or anything like that?
So we did a hypnobirthing day,
yeah,
I think, and we listened to this tape every night as we're going to sleep.
Yeah,
about hypnobirthing. We did Bump and Baby was the antenatal class we did, which is that right?
I think so.
Which was really good. We didn't really make many friends from the group because I tell you what happened is it was one of those ones where it was like 2 days on one weekend.
Right.
Rather than, I think all the people we know that have made friends from NCT classes are people who've done 8 evenings or whatever.
Yeah.
So you get that kind of short thing. Whereas this was like, I suppose the equivalent of those, you know, those people that go away and learn to drive in a week, you know, those kind of, it was the equivalent of that. So it didn't have, in the same bonding experience, I think.
Yeah.
So we did them. But then in the end, it was 10 days late.
Oh, really?
My wife had to have an emergency cesarean.
Oh, really? So that's the thing, isn't it? You can't plan.
Yeah,
I think the biggest thing, so I did hypnobirthing and stuff. And I think for me, it kept me nice and calm throughout the whole experience. Mm. But when it comes to birth, you know, your baby's going to have its own agenda. You know, your
totally.
Body does what it does. And how was that for you? How was the weight during those 10 days?
It was quite weird because it never really, I suppose it doesn't, it didn't feel like it was going to happen ever. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of, yeah, I never really felt like it was going to, maybe you're saying this after the event, it always felt like this is just going to be late and we're going to end up having to be induced. I don't know why it felt like that, but it did.
Yeah.
One of my main memories is it was during a series of The Last Leg. So I really didn't want it to be on a Friday because I thought that would be like doubly stressful if I wasn't there and stuff. And that's one of my main memories, is trying to get through, is those Fridays being doubly stressful.
Yeah. Well, and also, I guess it's one of those things where, you know, I think we both work in a way that work is such a focus. And there are very few things, I think, where real life comes and pulls you away from that and really makes you kind of question where you should be. The birth of your child is definitely one of those.
Definitely.
But
one of those.
Then it's that whole thing that comes knowing you're going to let people down, which is, you know, obviously for really good reasons, but part of you goes, oh, all the mess that you're leaving everyone else around that.
Yeah, totally. It's a really weird time. I remember like walking around Victoria Park where we live just that week before. You know, people say this kind of stuff like, what you should do is you should do all the things you aren't going to get to do, like go to the cinema or go for dinner.
Yeah.
We didn't really do them. And I wouldn't say I regret it, because I don't believe that were you like up at 3 a.m. with a child that wouldn't sleep, you go, I'm really glad I went to the cinema 3 weeks ago. It wouldn't make any difference. Like, yeah, once you've got the baby, what you did before is of no consequence.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we went for dinner before we had this baby. It's really getting me through this awful sleepless night.
So getting yourself suited up and ready for surgery, C-section, was it?
Yeah, because... this sounds so kind of glib and obvious, but it was much more like a operation than I realised.
Yeah.
So they went round the room and they do that thing. I've never been in an operation consciously. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously. And so suddenly you're in an operation. It's like you're in a medical drama. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They do that thing where they go around the room and they say who everyone is. Did you have, I don't know if you...
No. So they introduce everyone so you know who is who.
Yeah, but not for you. I think that's just, is that practice that they do in a surgery or whatever?
Right.
I don't know how it works. So they go around the room and they almost take a register almost of who's in there.
Yeah.
It must be good practice or whatever. And then it was very quick. I remember just shaking with like nerves.
Really?
Because you're just... the adrenaline going around your body is insane. It's weird because obviously the second time, well, not obviously, but the second time we were advised, because of what had happened the first time, to have a planned C-section.
Right.
So I've never been in that room of a straightforward birth.
Yeah.
So I haven't got that to compare it to. But the second time was bizarre because it was so casual.
Really?
Yeah. Literally, like, the guy that was doing it chatting while he was doing it to us. Like, he's cutting your hair. Do you know what I mean? Like,
got any nice holiday plans?
Yeah, literally, like, which is great, obviously, and all that. It was really, like, brilliant.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to them, it's just another C-section, isn't it? Like, it's just, which is reassuring. They're not going, shit, that would be much worse.
But it's
quite astonishing. The difference in mood of the first and the second one.
Because one was an emergency and one was planned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not so much from the other people, but just from yourself.
Yeah. I guess because you know what you're expecting a little bit as well. You've seen it before. You know how, you know, the register wouldn't have caught you off guard. It's just like,
almost
a familiarity with it.
Yeah. I don't have loads of vivid memories of either of them. You just have the memories of the emotion of them, if that makes sense.
Can you remember how it felt meeting Pearl for the first time?
I remember one of the best bits of advice I ever got from a friend was like, don't put yourself under pressure for it to be this kind of Hollywood moment where you...
so important.
I think that one of the most dangerous things you can kind of tell people is when you meet your baby, you will feel a love like you've never felt before. Because
the whole
world
will make sense.
Yeah, there's this huge pressure.
Yeah.
Like, which I just don't, it's always don't think you need in your life, if you know what I mean. I just remember just the shock of how small she was.
Yeah.
That's what I mainly remember. But I don't, that doesn't feel as vivid to me as the C-section, because I think it was such a drama.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think it was almost just like relief that nothing had gone wrong.
Yeah.
Was the main thing.
Yeah.
That's kind of, that whole experience is overshadowed by this emergency C-section at 4 in the morning or whatever it was.
And were there parts where you had to come home and leave the both of them at hospital and then for a few days, or were you able to stay there the whole time?
No, we didn't stay for that long.
Oh, really?
I don't think. So the first night, this is mad, she just was screaming and screaming and screaming. And we just couldn't stop her screaming.
Yeah.
To the point where it got quite worrying. So we took her into the hospital. And because we were like, I don't know, like worried.
Yeah. Never, and when you don't know what's normal and what's not.
No, exactly. And you're feeding her. And the more we're feeding her, the more she was screaming. And yeah. It was just like, God, is there something wrong? And so we took her in her car seat. And then as we walked through the car park, we got inside. And because we'd walked through the cold of the car park, even though she was wrapped up warm, she basically went a bit blue. So now we're like completely panicking. It was horrific.
Yeah.
And so we get in there with basically this baby that's gone blue. And it was just like awful, awful,
oh my
awful,
gosh.
Awful. But it was all fine. It was just when they're a baby, they just, yeah, cluster feeding, isn't it? Or whatever it's called. Where they just... You can't basically feed them enough at the start sometimes, can you?
Yeah. God, that must have been worrying.
Yeah, it was horrific. I mean, you can look back and laugh now, but at the time it was absolutely unbelievably scary.
Yeah.
More scary than the cesarean, really, because you're like, I can't believe this is happening to us. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, and so we had to go to hospital with two of ours within the first week. And it is that they just are so fragile and so vulnerable early on, and you just kind of, you know, you don't know what you're doing. You just want someone else to give you a little bit of guidance of what's going on.
I mean, it always seems to be nighttime when we go.
Yeah,
like
always.
The kids' A&E at Homerton Hospital in East London, like the amount of evenings I've spent there is incredible, like with croup or with, you know, whatever, falling and hitting a head, all the, you know.
Yeah.
And once you've said to yourself, once one of you has said, do you think we should take her in?
Oh, it's in your mind then.
It's game over. You might as well just go then. Because you can't ever not.
You never
want
to be the parent who said, no, they're okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it actually be something really bad.
Yeah, so you've basically got to take them in at that point.
Yeah, very, very true.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And at what point did you and Rob decide to create a podcast? And was this, how was that born? Was that born from just you two talking about it all anyway?
We talk about it all. Obviously, it was more difficult for him because he had two. He was also doing a lot of videos on Instagram about how tough he was finding it.
Right.
And also, on top of that, we'd kind of suddenly got a lot of free time. We were both meant to be on tour, so that wasn't happening. And all that loaded. So suddenly you're like, well, what can I do? Just to feel like I'm working and I'm moving. I'm doing something creatively.
Yeah.
I think that's how it felt. And so what I remember is from the first voice memo I sent him suggesting the idea to the first episode going out was 9 days.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That shows how little we had going on. I sent the voice memo to him and then he kind of discussed it, and we were like, that'll be fun, and it's something to do. And I'd be lying if I didn't say, you'd go, oh, this could be something that you could run on, because obviously that thought entered your head. I'm not going to pretend like you go, oh, I had no idea people would like it. Because you obviously, whenever you start any project, you're like, I hope people really like this and it's successful. But yeah, we certainly couldn't have anticipated how it snowballed. It just felt like, you know, in a weird way, it just tapped into a bit of a moment, I suppose, initially. Yeah. Now it's just become a bit of a soap opera. It's quite weird where we just talk about our week and just, we interview someone on a Friday, but on a Tuesday, it's just us telling each other about our week as parents. And I think people like it as a soap opera. We've kind of, somehow we've become the Kardashians. Do you know what I mean? It's become.
Well, I guess the thing is, like, you're talking about the mundane things that parents do day by day and week by week. And I think the comfort in it is hearing that other people were going through similar things and finding the joy in it. I think we both know that there are certain parts of parenting that are really, really tough, but you find the humour in it and it's less tough. You feel less alone, when those situations arise.
Totally. And from a point of view of someone who, when something bad's happening to you as a parent, and I'm sure you found this, that you go, well, the good thing is, this is kind of like something I can now, this is a positive experience for me to draw on in my work. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I'll make a note in my phone on that one.
This isn't all for nothing. Do you know what I mean? Like, actually, it's good that I'm like, last week when Cassius had COVID, so he was ill, running a temperature, and then you give him Calpol, and then the Calpol doesn't quite work long enough to get to the next Calpol, so he's running a temperature for another hour before you can give him more Calpol, that kind of situation. And so he couldn't sleep unless he was on someone. And so I was just sat up. I just had to sit up from 3:30 to 6:30 in the dark with him on me, which is a really like newborn thing, I think a lot of parents do. And you're like, I'd be lying if I didn't say there's part of me that thought this is a good anecdote for the podcast.
It must be horrible if a week goes past and you've got like, kids, you've done nothing. You've given me nothing this week.
Yeah.
How has fatherhood changed you?
It's totally changed my kind of outlook, in the sense of, on a purely physical and lifestyle way, I don't drink nearly as much, which is a really positive thing. It's really stopped me drinking.
Yeah.
In your 20s and 30s, I was just able to go out and get drunk, and it was part of my life, and it was part of. And now I actively, on New Year's Eve, I was like, I don't want to stay up till midnight. I don't see the point. I just quite like, I've really happy just at home in my life, which I think is a really, and that's not something that happens overnight. It's not that thing where you go, I picked up my baby and I thought, I never want to go out with my mates again, because it's not like that. But it's like, over time you go, I'm really like enjoying relaxing towards middle age, and I'm really enjoying the idea of this being my family home. And that is where you get your excitement and your pleasure now, rather than outside the house, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I always find as well, when the kids were a lot younger, the idea of drinking and something happening.
Yeah.
That really freaked me out.
Totally. And the idea of like, just every time now, if I have a social occasion, you're like, is this worth it?
Yeah.
Like, because is this worth it for what tomorrow will be like? And 9 times out of 10, it isn't worth it. Like, I don't want to be a dad who's wishing the day away.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a dad who's going 4 hours till bedtime, 4 hours till I can open a glass of wine in the evening. I want the day to be as enjoyable as the evening.
Yeah.
Often it isn't, because your kid's kicking off in a, you know, greengrocer's or whatever, but like, often it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really feel like I've relaxed into it being that stage of my life.
Yeah. And from being someone who loved to be organised, loved to have a certain amount of control of life. How has that been letting go of all of that? And knowing that certain things, like, you know, there could be a kickoff in a grocery shop and you've just got to roll with it. And there are certain elements of life now that you can't control at all.
I wouldn't say that I'm a completely changed person, in that I'm still kind of, you know, in my work life, I'm still like to be in control and on top of stuff. And that. But I think you learn a lot. When your child's ill, that's a really good example of when you just go, okay, I surrender to this for the next 3 days. This is my life. Yeah. And that's a really moment when you go, that's when you let go and you go, I am secondary and my life is now just helping a child get through this. And I have got no, that doesn't even kind of hit the sides in terms of my thinking, God, I wish this wasn't the case.
Yeah.
I also think, because I work away and because I work a lot, it's maybe much, because, you know, when you're working, you're dipping in and out of parenting, obviously. Yeah. You're not parenting 24/7. And so it's much easier maybe for me to go, I just surrender to this, because it's just Saturday, it's just Sunday, it's just a Monday morning or whatever. Maybe if I was a full-time parent, I would be going, I need more to go, I mean, a bit more control of this, but I that's how I feel about that, I think, maybe. I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think you evolve so much as a parent.
Well, and also you evolve as a parent, and the situation is changing all the time. Like, you must have got into a point where with the three of you, it was a nice little comfortable setup. You knew the dynamic. And then Cassius arrives and that changes again. And as he gets older and their relationship and bond changes between the two of them, it will change again. It's always evolving.
Totally. And God, you get, I think, like, my daughter's 4.5 and she's like, when she was three, she, you know, she had some, you know, the temper tantrums of a 3 year old, but she's really chilled out now. And she's really, and you just go, she's much more independent. And you just go, if we only had her, our life would be so simple.
I think any parent who's got more than one, that thought goes into their head quite frequently. Yeah. What if?
Yeah. But it all changes, but that's the fun of it, right?
Yeah.
And that's the, thank God it all changes, because when it's bad, you know it's going to change.
Yeah. And
it's the classic kind of, the best advice you can ever give anyone is everything's a phase.
Yeah, exactly. So the good bits, really hold on to it. And the bad bits, enjoy it. Stew.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's obviously much easier said than done, isn't it? Like everything with parenting, it's easier said than done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like sometimes when it all... It's surprising, I think, how when everything does fall apart, how massive it feels.
Yeah, totally. And how much it can get you far more than anyone else. Yeah. How much they can, even at the age of 4, they can press your buttons far more than anyone else. And you go, oh, God, what's this going to be like in 10 years when they're going out? Like, I've got a friend whose kid is now, you know, being a teenage tearaway kind of thing. And I just go, having that overhanging everything you do.
Yeah.
Is that easier than a baby that needs you 24/7, or is that more difficult? And I don't know. It's all, they're all different phases, aren't they? All just as easy and difficult as each other.
Yeah. I think. And the joys of things to come.
Yeah.
If you could write a letter on being a dad, who would it be to and what would you say?
I think you'd write to your kids, wouldn't you? I definitely would. And I would say, just try and just, it's as difficult as it sounds, just try and be as reactive as possible rather than controlling the situations, because that's, I think, also lose all, that's the best thing I'd write in it, is lose all expectation of what things might be, because they're never going to be. The birthday party is never going to be that perfect moment you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
But also, and so don't put too much pressure on these situations, because you can't put pressure on a three-year-old to deliver the perfect Christmas day that you wanted it to or whatever. And so just enjoy what it is rather than get het up on what you hoped every situation would be, I think.
It's interesting, I think, because we put so much emphasis on like social media and the polished images of, you know, people in their families. But actually, we've been having that for decades through TV and film. You know, this perfect image of a family, you know, all together and cozied up on Christmas Day or the brilliant birthday party. And I think it's actually only recently where, with things like Catastrophe or Motherland, where actually you're seeing a real side of parenting where things fall apart.
I didn't even understand that parenting was a thing when I was a kid. Do you know what I mean? In the sense, if you don't understand, but I'd be fascinated to know whether my parents and their friends talked about the difficulties of parenting and all those kind of things. Yeah. And that's what has happened with, I think, both of our careers, is that, me and you, is that we've realised that people respond to honesty far more than people respond to... I think parenting is... I know I'm not really on Twitter. I'm on Instagram a bit, but I'm not like... And I'm not on TikTok or anything, but like, it seems to me... Parenting is an area where people respond far more to imperfection and find that much more attractive to deal with than the perfection that is often put forward on social media.
Yeah.
And that's the same with any parenting. I'm talking to any parent. I've got friends who I talk to who are, we're honest with, and they're honest with us about the difficulties of our children, our difficulties of parenting. And that has only made our bond to them closer.
Because it makes you want to go to them, though, doesn't it? It makes you want to listen to them. It makes you want to talk to them. Whereas the people that are pretending everything's perfect just kind of switch off.
We've got friends who it is like they just wouldn't open up about, you know, it is as if their life is perfect.
Yeah.
And maybe it is. But,
but in our heads, it's not. It's not.
It's not. It can't be. But it makes you just not engage with them at all nearly as much about parenting.
Yeah.
And it makes you almost like you don't want to open up yourself to them because you feel like it just, the whole thing goes wrong if you're doing that. It's about, you know, dropping the mask, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's really important, especially in parenting, to have those people that you can do that with.
Totally agree, yeah. And I think, yeah, you find those people and it really, it's very helpful and reassuring.
Yeah. So the podcast finishes with you finishing three sentences.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Are you ready?
Pressure's on. Yeah.
Being a dad means?
Being a dad means... just being there for your children to help them have as happy a life as possible. It's that simple. Surrendering your life to your child's life and doing everything to help them have as little baggage as possible.
Which I think is impossible.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
It's totally impossible. And suddenly you go, but all you can do is try. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. All you can do is try.
Yeah. Since having children,
I have changed my lifestyle completely and it's made me so much happier to just relax into being this new kind of version of myself.
Do you think it's made you more focused in terms of work and stuff?
I think, yeah, I certainly think you have to make the time count when you're upstairs at the computer or when you go and do a preview gig for a tour. You're like, right, I have to try all these jokes because I can't just come out tomorrow night and do this. I've only got three nights this week when I can do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you become far more focused on getting stuff done.
Mm. And finally, I'm happy when?
I'm happy when I'm in bed by 9:30.
What a treat. I love
that. Isn't that I never thought that would be me, but it is.
And also, though, I think one thing is that when you do get that extra sleep or when you go to bed earlier, because we all know that the earlier sleep is the best sleep anyway, there is something, it just sets you up better for the next day. You can parent better and just function better because of that.
You feel invincible.
Yeah.
You feel so... if I had a good sleep and I have a cup of tea in the morning, I just feel like, I know, like, how my body's so kind of responds to stimulants so strongly, obviously, but like one cup of tea on a good sleep with absolutely no alcohol in my life, I feel like I'm a kind of, I feel like I'm a Wolf of Wall Street. I've got that much.
Josh, thank you so much for coming on and chatting today.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I've loved it.
Cheers.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.